Hello, everyone, and welcome into CrushTheStreet.com. I got a great guest on the line with me today, Steve Van Meter, and we're going to be discussing macroeconomics. He has been blowing up on YouTube with the Macro Show, and we're going to be discussing all things economy, the 2020 year, what we're seeing in Bitcoin. Is gold and silver a good investment? And just his thoughts, I mean, how he got to where he is today. So, Steve, thanks for coming on the show with me today.
Kenneth, thanks for having me. It's really my pleasure to be here today.
We have your links in the description. I highly recommend everyone to check them out. Steve, please tell us how you got to where you are today. Obviously, you were telling me you were doing these videos for your clients. And then over the last year, you've become a rock star on YouTube. So please share your experience with us.
You know, Kenneth, I really have great fans. I mean, the success of the show is literally a testament to them. Certainly nothing spectacular that I'm doing. I just listen to them and we have a lot of fun. So I started managing a macro fund around 4 years ago or thereabouts. And one thing I quickly learned that when you invest with a macro thesis, a lot of people don't understand what that is. They just don't get it. And it's not that they don't want to get it. It's just macro funds aren't your traditional, you know, 60% stock, 40% bond fund. They can do different things at different times. And so I quickly realized that the key to being successful in terms of, you know, communicating with my clients means that I had to do more than a quarterly newsletter, which turned into a monthly newsletter, which turned into a weekly newsletter, which eventually then turned into a weekly show and then a three-day show. And so what you're seeing on YouTube is actually a show that I've been doing for my clients hosted on a private server for a number of years that, you know, recently went public. And, you know, once the show kind of got discovered and then I went on Real Vision, you know, like I said, I just have some, you know, amazing fans that have been extremely supportive, are eager to learn about how the economy works and how someone who, you know, runs macro, what their thoughts are, how they view things. And, you know, it's just been phenomenal. It's been far more than I ever thought it would ever be.
Yeah. You're not a fake guru who just got popular. You've been doing this for a while and the show has just blown up very recently. So talk to us about 2020. I mean, what are your thoughts on what we've seen with stocks, what we've seen just in general with the pin, I guess. A lot of people called the virus the pin that bursted the bubble. But since then, since March, we've seen so much take place in the markets. The fastest recovery, you know, the world has ever seen, you know, and this recovery largely happening in the big companies. So I won't talk too much more, but it's some general thoughts here.
Yeah, it's pretty interesting. If someone would have called me up years ago and said markets will be sitting near their all-time high in the middle of a global pandemic, I don't think I would have believed them, or anybody in this industry would actually believe that. You know, what we have since March is that people really believe that this was a pandemic-led recession. Had there not been a pandemic, you know, had COVID not happened, everything would be fine. In fact, the economy would be roaring forward right now. And so what happened in March is people bought the dip. Obviously, you know, for those that did, turned out to be a pretty smart move. There's no argument about that. And they're cramming into risk assets under the belief that the recession is about to be over, that, you know, once there's a vaccine, that everyone's going back to work, all the businesses that close are going to reopen, everyone that wanted a job before the recession happened that didn't have one are going to get one, wages are going to go up, there's a massive amount of pent-up demand. And the problem is, that's not entirely true, because from a macro perspective, the global economy was slowing down in the fourth quarter of 2018. And if you look at the data, you could really see Japan entering a recession in, you know, the third, fourth quarter of 19. The pandemic is just something in the, you know, it's kind of like maybe being in the eye of a hurricane, but being sick because you can't see what's going on around you. And that's actually probably the thing that concerns me the most, is people are taking huge, huge speculative risks in a market. I mean, we see what a 38 trillion market cap. And then we have the options market, which is sitting at 20 trillion. I mean, the largest number or dollar amount of call options are sitting on this market now. And people are just taking huge, huge amounts of risk on the bet that everything's going to be way better than it was, when they can't see that we haven't even finished what started in fourth quarter of 18. The events that led to the economy slowing down haven't worked themselves out. The pandemic didn't fix that. The stimulus hasn't fixed it, and the Fed hasn't fixed it. So, you know, my outlook, going into 2021 is not pretty, and I'm not really thinking there'll be a recovery maybe until closer to 2022.
Yeah. Yeah, I totally agree. And it's crazy the nuance that goes into what actually impacts the valuations, because, you know, we can talk about the macro and what should happen, but there's so much nuance as to, you know, I would have predicted, if you would have described the events of 2020, record stimulus, billions of people locked down in their homes, a global pandemic. I mean, I would have guessed $5,000 gold, $10,000 gold, and, you know, a dollar crisis, stock market crashing. I mean, it's crazy if you were to describe what we saw this year, but it's just stock mania at the moment. But having said that, you know, we've seen the M2 money supply grow, since the 50s, basically with the stock market and the real estate market for that matter. So to the degree that we're seeing financialized assets disconnect from fundamentals, is it just a dollar issue? To that degree, do we continue to see stocks go to the moon and the dollar fall?
Yeah, the M2 is kind of interesting, because a lot of people look at it and I think they read way more into it than they should. It seems to be the new correlation for everything. And Kenneth, as you just pointed out, the long run on this thing, it's nothing spectacular. I mean, before the pandemic, it was running on a year-over-year basis at like 5.89%, somewhere in there. Today, it's at 6.2. The long run average is 6. The fact that anyone's even looking at it for direction kind of makes me think they're missing the big picture. And I have this weird view about the dollar. I know a lot of people disagree with it, but the recent decline in the dollar was mainly for two reasons. One, you know, we had a pandemic, we closed the economy, we sent people home and we gave them more money and they couldn't spend it. So if you look at just purely a supply and demand perspective, they had dollars and, well, they couldn't spend them. So why would the dollar rise? No, it made sense that following March, the dollar got weaker. And then you have this whole narrative that's coming out that stimulus somehow is money printing. That even though never a stimulus package in the history of this country has ever been, but now it is, and that quantitative easing is money printing. And even though we can go back to QE 1, 2, and 3 and see that, well, the dollar didn't do that, go down due to that. So it wasn't money printing, that all of a sudden the dollar is literally going to go to the floor and that nobody wants it. And it's weird to me as an American that people think that our currency is worthless. And to me, that's almost from a national pride perspective. I just feel odd that, you know, we should want the dollar to be strong, but yet everywhere I turn, everyone is anti-dollar because their view is that nobody wants it. There's going to be this rampant inflation from, you know, stimulus that we haven't seen, from quantitative easing we haven't seen. But yet from a macro perspective, you know, how did we get here? So, you know, what brought us, you know, from 2018 to have the economy slow down? And it's really simple. There's a global dollar shortage due to the fact that the Federal Reserve tightened monetary policy by raising rates and unwinding a balance sheet, and it exacerbated what is in the natural picture of a debt-based economy, already a dollar shortage, but it made it bigger. And it's weird that here we have the shortage, and the only reason you look at, you know, why stocks have rallied, you can draw, you know, inverse to the dollar, you can see what's going on here, is that people suddenly think the dollar's going to be worthless, and yet it's a dollar shortage. And so this weak dollar's kept everything together, but the moment the music stops and we realize there's a dollar shortage and there's a huge demand for it, everything's going to reverse in a rapid way. And the market and investors aren't positioned for that. They're not, they've got nothing defensive in their portfolios or their investments to hedge any sort of downside move. Like you said, it's just the market is crazy bulled up and nowhere to go but up.
Steve, what are your thoughts on real estate when it comes to what we're seeing? I mean, it just seems like an asset class that too is getting just odd valuations with it continuing to boom. I mean, in cities like LA, I mean, well, why is LA booming with so many people moving out of the city? You know, rent moratoriums and all these things that are happening. Why are we seeing this? And do you expect it to last?
You know, one of the interesting things, Kenneth, is when you've lived through two bubbles. So when you live through the dot-com bubble, you understand what a stock bubble is. And when you live through a real estate bubble, you don't understand what that is. And, you know, the main thing that's driving real estate prices is people are leaving the major cities, people that can afford to, who have jobs where they can work remotely and believe they can continue to work remotely. And from what I'm hearing, they're not even selling some of their old property. They're actually holding on to it and just buying something new. So they're creating a lot of demand, which is making it appear that there's this huge surge in real estate. Now, the data is correct. The data is showing there is demand there, but will it last? Well, this is where I have to, again, come back to the millennial generation. They were priced out before all of this. And some of them are trying to get in because they think prices are going higher. But, you know, bubbles have an interesting way of reversing. They always eventually pop. So am I bullish on real estate? Not at all. I know that in recessions, real estate values will drop because people can't afford them. And then ultimately, due to the dollar shortage, as people can't afford to even make payments on their homes. And we saw that during the great financial crisis. So there's really no doubt in my mind that we'll see a repeat of that again.
Steve, what are your thoughts on crypto, specifically Bitcoin? That's what we've been mostly focused on here at Crush the Street. Obviously, seeing it at 19,000, almost hitting 20,000 this week has been pretty exciting for those who've been invested in it. What are your thoughts on what's going on here and why it's happening?
Yeah, it's pretty impressive. You know, just for your listeners, I don't own any cryptocurrencies. I've never owned any. My firm doesn't have an official policy. So as a licensed advisor, I tend to, I can't do what my firm doesn't authorize. And number two, I don't invest in anything that I can't actually help my clients invest in. So I've chosen just to be a follower of it, a fan of it. I'm watching it, but I have no stake in the game. And I can say that its rise is, well, it's pretty impressive. The question that I keep asking is it a risk asset or is it a defensive asset? And some people say it's both. And I don't know how that can be. So, you know, from a technical perspective, which is the only way that I can look at it on a chart, well, either we're about to see one heck of a double top or one heck of a breakout to the upside. I don't know which it's going to be, but I can tell you it's pretty fun to watch.
Absolutely. Well, Steve, I'd like to get your thoughts here as we round out this explosive year. Here we are in December doing this interview. The election seemed to be up in the air, depending on what news station you're watching, and just the volatility. I mean, what are your thoughts when it comes to stocks? And, you know, is there any triggers that are tied to the presidential election that you see going forward here?
You know, it's interesting that, stocks thought President Trump was bullish, and now they think that, for your listeners, I don't know who is going to be the official president, but let's just say that Biden is going to be our next president. Are stocks bullish on that? Well, I mean, that's the problem with bull markets. You know, when you see the dot-com bubbles, you know, as I lived through it, Kenneth, I'm guessing you probably did too. It didn't matter what it was. Everything was bullish. Good news is bullish. Bad news is bullish. And heck, even no news is bullish. Everything is always bullish every day until it isn't. And, you know, when you look from an investment perspective, so I'm not a trader, I'm an investor. You know, I look at a longer term picture is how do you make money? Do you buy high and hope it goes higher and try to get out in time? Well, I've done that before. It has worked, but I can tell you that it has not worked more than it has. Or I can look and say, wow, stocks are massively overvalued compared to the economy. So either the economy has to just surge higher, which again, I don't see happening, to catch up to valuations. And that means that stocks are going to plateau for years, or they're going to come back down and I can buy low and hold. And that's kind of what I like to do. So I look at those equity market and yeah, it's massively overvalued. If people looked at what they were paying for, you know, I look at it, you know, people will go buy a car and shop, you know, four or five dealers, they'll go online, but go buy an overpriced stock. Yeah, sure. No problem. I'll do that without any research, but no one would go and pay, you know, 30, 40% more from a car. They tell you they're dumb. Pay 30, 40% more for a stock. Sure. So for me, it doesn't make any sense. I prefer to buy low and ride it out for years.
Good words there. Steve, if people want to learn more about you, the work you do, your firm, please let them know where they can go and what they can expect to find.
Sure. You can find my website at stephenvanmeter.com. I've got a whole host of financial planning stuff. You can find me on Twitter at Meter Steven, spelled M-E-T-R-E-S-T-E-V-E-N. And then the Macro Show on Twitter, Mondays, Wednesdays, and Fridays. And then my Sunday chart show. You can just look my name up on Twitter. And I'm sure Kenzie will put some links in the description for people to be able to find me.
Steve, thanks so much for coming on the show with me today. Really appreciate your time.
Oh, it was absolutely my pleasure.